Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm reading for you in digest form, the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal. The winter 2007, the QCWA Journal editor is Douglas Walbridge. Contributing authors, John B. Johnston, George Hart, and David Kahn. The business office is located at QCWA, Incorporated, P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705. The business office telephone number, area 508-405-1930. If you choose to send email, it's qcwagm@rcn.com. This recording in digest form is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System in cooperation with the Quarter Century Wireless Association. The Courage Handy Hams are located at 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. Handy Ham may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Again, my name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Following is a list of the QCWA officers and board of directors. The president, John B. Johnston, call W3BE. Vice president, Leonard Nathanson, W8RC. Secretary, Walter Supina, N3WS. Treasurer, Frank Harris, WA4PAM. And the general manager again, Chuck Walbridge, call K1IGD. Let's begin with a note from the president, John B. Johnston. Winter 2007. Greetings, members. It's that time again. You should be making your chapter plans for the new year 2008. Your chapter will enjoy better programs when you have such a plan around which you can obtain interesting speakers and arrange for field trips. Your first official gathering will probably be your official annual meeting. Next, there are some important dates to avoid. Blackout, October 3, 4, and 5. That's when you will be at the beautiful seaside in Virginia Beach, Virginia, for our QCWA convention, hosted by Tidewater Chapter Number 119. Save May 16, 17, and 18 for the great Dayton Hamvention. We want to greet all of you there at our QCWA booth and at our Friday QCWA dinner hosted by our Southwest Ohio Chapter 9. Add to your schedule a flying of our banner at your local hamfests. Many hamfest sponsors will provide a table gratis for QCWA chapters. This makes a fine rallying point for our members and prospective members. It is our best opportunity to explain to our amateur service community just what our association is all about. You can invite those first licensed any time before 1984 to become a part of it. Explain to them that our QCWA is a celebration of their fellow hams who understand their valuable contribution to our fabulous hobby. QCWA is a lot of fun and we do good work. Let them know that they will become friends with interesting hams who understand and appreciate what amateur radio has accomplished. It is also time to call for your chapter's nominations for our QCWA Section 97.1 Presidential Honors Award for 2008. Five of these awards will be selected by April 1, 2008, and will be announced in our Summer 2008 QCWA Journal. For your nominee to be considered, please submit before March 15, 2008, your nomination to Director Harris. Call WB0OUM, P.O. Box 467, Boulevard, Missouri. I'll spell Boulevard, B-O-L-I-V-A-R, Missouri, M-O, 65613. Carolyn is the chairman of our Chapter Relations Standing Committee that is administering this program. On January 31, 1951, our Federal Communications Commission placed into our operating rules a statement of the type of amateur radio service it expects us to provide in return for being allowed to make use of some highly valuable radio spectrum. The statement of basis and purpose did not come from any international body. It applies only to the places where the FCC regulates the amateur service. The statement survives today in Section 97.1 of our rules. It is important that we pause annually to reflect upon just whom it is among our fellow members that we admire as our role models in helping to fulfill each of these five principles during the previous year. They are our Section 97.1 All-Stars. We are indebted to them for what they are doing and for reminding us of our wonderful privileges and making use of an increasingly valuable public resource. Chapters. Here is the call for your nominations. Include with the name and call sign of your nominee the specific award for which you are making your nomination and a statement of your reasons for making your nomination. There are five Presidential Honor Awards to be presented. They are 1. Section 97.1A, for service to the public as a voluntary non-commercial communication service, particularly with respect to providing emergency communications. 2. Section 97.1B, for continuing and extending the amateur operator's proven ability to contribute to the advancement of the radio art. 3. Section 97.1C, for advancing skills in both the communication and technical phases of the radio arts. 4. Section 97.1D, for expanding the existing reservoir within our amateur service of trained operators, technicians, and electronic experts. 5. Section 97.1E, for continuing and extending the amateur operator's unique ability to enhance international goodwill. This is your opportunity to recognize a deserving QCWA member in your chapter for helping make amateur radio the greatest hobby in the world. It is our way of thanking them for helping prove that it is truly in the public interest to allow persons interested in radio technology solely with a personal aim and without pecuniary interests to make use of highly valuable electromagnetic spectrum for carrying out our self-training, intercommunication, and technical investigations. Here's to another great QCWA year. Signed, DEW3BE. Let's move ahead now to the General Manager's Report. General Manager's Chuck Walbridge, call K1IGD for the winter of 2007. 2007 Convention, Denver, Colorado. All reports from those attending the annual convention at Denver indicate that it was a very pleasant event. Jan and I enjoyed meeting the many members with whom we speak on the phone or exchange emails. Information for the 2008 convention to be held in Virginia Beach, Virginia, is included in this issue. Start your plans now for the fall 2008. Now, the 2008 election. Listed in this issue are the names of the nominating committee for the 2008 officer/director election. A photo, a brief statement from each candidate will be in the Spring Journal. Any approved candidate petitions sent to headquarters will also be listed in the spring issue. Ballots will be mailed by April 1 and are due back to the tellers by July 15, 2008. Now, regarding the scholarship program, the Board of Directors approved the recommendation from the scholarship chairman, Leland Smith Jr., called W4YE, to award a total of $19,700 in scholarships for 2008. Through contributions from QCWA chapters, members, and friends of Silent Keys, QCWA has been able to award over $240,000 in scholarships to deserving college students. This has been accomplished with the support of the Foundation of Amateur Radio, who selects the winners for the awards. Now, regarding New Life member pins, Our supply of Life member pins is virtually exhausted, so it was time to redesign the pin and find a new supplier. The graphic below shows the pin, which is currently available from the office. The price remains at $8 each. And there is a black and white photo of that pin. It states on the top, Life member, and on the bottom, founded 1947. And it states the new stylish and redesigned Life member pin, 1-inch pin with a gold center and blue rim, only $8. Order one today. There's a page devoted to, hello, is anyone out there? That was with emphasis, folks, if you haven't noticed. This article appeared in the summer 2007 issue of the QCWA Journal, and a response has been less than stellar. Please read this article and respond. If you need help, ask someone from a local chapter or the ham next door. It reads as follows. It's become more and more apparent over the past several years that QCWA is losing history right before our eyes. This was driven home again when I received notice that Dwight, called W2ATM, had become a silent key. Dwight was QCWA member 2117. All I received was a copy of his obituary, which was very sparse concerning his amateur experience. After a Google search on W2ATM, I was able to pull together more information on Dwight and add it to his QCWA SK webpage. I've had the honor of posting 176 Silent Key pages thus far, and it's time to take the next step. It's time we start honoring our members while they are still among us. I want biographies and pictures. Could be high school, college, wedding, first birthday, and current would be nice. Of QCWA members that have membership numbers lower than 10,000, or are over 80 years old, or are in failing health. You may also include QSL cards, pictures of your station. Include an equipment list if you do that. Almost anything that pertains to your ham experience. I'd like the bios as a Word document or a text file. It would be nice for the pictures and QSL cards to be in digital format, but I do have a scanner. Include an SASE, self-addressed stamped envelope, if you want the pictures returned. In the future, we'll seek out the next group of younger members. Submit everything to me at the following, lowercase, brusk@hutchtel.net. I'll spell it out. brusk@hutchtel.net. Thanks and 73s. It's signed Bob, call N0UF, QCWA, webmaster. I'm going to give you the Foundation for Amateur Radio Incorporated QCWA Scholarship winners. I will name the scholarship. And then the winner. In the category of QCWA named memorial scholarships, Ralph Hassinger, W2CVF, chapter member scholarship. Winner, Stephen Simpson, KC8IOY, Ocala, Florida. Leland Smith, Sr., W5KL, memorial scholarship. Rebecca Rich, call. KB0VVT, Raytown, Missouri. The Travis Baird Memorial Scholarship. Winner, Charles Johnson, N3HX, Newcastle, Pennsylvania. In the category of QCWA named Memorial Scholarships, there were five at $1,000 each. Robert Cressip, W9LRI Memorial Scholarship. Winner, Allison Dreyer, KD5IVO, DeSoto, Texas. Donald and Phyllis Doughty, Family Scholarship. Winner, Bryce T. Salmi, KB1LQC, Chelmsford, Massachusetts. Jacobson-Keller, her family, W3DUG and W4ZC Scholarship. Jonathan Troop, K0DE, Berthode, Colorado. Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, Family Living Scholarship. Winner, Francis T. Gregian, KD5HTB, Carrollton, Texas. Edwin P. Woodruff, W3SX, Memorial Scholarship. Winner, Brenton J. Salmi, KB1LQD, Chelmsford, Massachusetts. In a category of QCWA Sal and Key Memorial Scholarships, there were 10 at $1,000 each. Daniel Ellis, KG4IVC, Pikeville, North Carolina. Nathaniel Heatwall, WZ3AR, Damascus, Maryland. Alexander Jasper, KB9TTO, Plover, Wisconsin. Amy Johnson, KB3HXF, Newcastle, Pennsylvania. Carolyn R. Crick, KA9APT, Golden Valley, Arizona. Carrie Mendelbaugh, KC0VNH, St. Louis, Missouri. Robert Rickard, KG4MBQ, New Bern, North Carolina. Stephanie Schaefer, KC2NSA, Binghamton, New York. Deanna Tucker, KE5JBQ, Yukon, Oklahoma. Jonathan Van Normand, KC0ORR, Rochester, Minnesota. QCWA congratulates our scholarship winners for 2007. And the following pages gives a detailed bio of all of these winning participants. What a great thrill it must be for them. I'm going to go now to the chapter reports. At the very heading of this section, chapter reports are a very important part of the journal. We would like to see regular reports from all chapters. If your chapter is not represented on these pages, please ask your secretary to file a special report for the journal. Now, please send the reports to Chuck Walbridge, General Manager, to arrive no later than the following dates, January 1 for spring, April 1 for summer, July 1 for fall, and October 1 for winter. Attention, QCWA Chapter Report Guidelines. All chapter reports will need to follow these limits set by the Publication Standing Committee, 500 words and 2 photos maximum. When taking photos, group together those receiving awards rather than individual photos. Those can always be posted on a chapter webpage. When a chapter report is submitted, please include the chapter number in the title and with any photo submitted. Preferred formats for reports are Word, which is .doc, RTF, or plain text. Now for the listener, this is your reader Bob, N1BLF. I have actually 21 members of all the various chapters of QCWA that have asked that they be given audio copies of these journals, either on tape or on CDs. And yet, of these 21, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Only 8 of those chapters have actually submitted chapter reports for publication, which means that all the rest of the, from 8 to 21, which would be perhaps 13 members, will not even hear the report read to them about activities in their local chapter. So just saying that pretty much tells you why it's important for chapter reports to be filed on time, and filed every quarter so that we can all share in the activities, and most especially those that are either sight or print impaired can also enjoy the facts and details of what goes on in their own chapter. I'm going to start with just those chapters that are presented for those kinds of members. First one is Chapter 10 in Michigan. As 2007 draws to a close, the members of Chapter 10 wish to extend season's greetings to all of the QCWA membership and hope that you have a happy and prosperous new year. in 2008. We welcome our newest members into Chapter 10, Robert Waters, W8AXR, Westland, Michigan, Robert J. Oaks, N8BNC, Lausanne, Michigan, and Thomas J. Liska, K9CJM, Wisconsin Rapids, Michigan. Our chapter membership now stands at 128 primary members. Our annual summer picnic was held on August 15, 2007 at the Kenwood Park in Cadillac, Michigan, and was attended by 54 members and guests. Following the picnic dinner, the following QCWA awards were presented. Edward Ireland, W8HZF, 55th Anniversary of Licensing. David Derain, K8ESQ. Stanford Rowe, K6VWE. And Thomas Schoenover, K8BTE. All received their 50th Anniversary of Licensing Award and their 50 years of continuous licensing award. Congratulations to all of you. The highlights of our presentations was the presentation of the QCWA President's Award, which was presented to Peter Hansen, W8TWA, for his outstanding contribution to Chapter 10 and QCWA. Congratulations, Pete, for receiving this prestigious award. And there's a photograph of that very handsome young man. Moving now to Chapter 41, Dallas, Texas. Several chapter members witnessed the recent fly-in of vintage World War II warplanes to the Lancaster, Texas Municipal Airport. Operations Center for the Dallas-Fort Worth Wing of the Commemorative Air Force, that's CAF. The CAF owns and maintains in flying condition a significant number of rare military aircraft that were produced in the thousands during World War II. Its aircraft and static displays are seen over a wide portion of the country at air shows each year. For many young spectators, it's the first time to see a large propeller-driven aircraft up close or in flight, while the distinct, deep-throated sound of large rotary engines spark many memories in a much older generation, many of whom flew or serviced such craft in dire times. Chapter member Ken Norvell, W5KN, a member of the CAF and radio operator on the CAF's R4D, that's the Navy version of the famed DC-3 airliner, provided guided tours and answered many spectator questions. In addition, Ken manned the public address system and provided music of the 1930s and 1940s, popular during the war years, from his extensive collection. Chapter member Barney Moffitt, K5CJZ, who was recently recognized with a 75-year operating certificate, celebrated his 93rd birthday in September. Steve Brody, K5ZYZ, has graciously acceded to a third term as chapter president. He originated and directed a successful fundraising campaign enabling the chapter to purchase a $700 HP projector and related sound equipment, making possible heretofore unavailable programs enhancing our chapter meetings. And if distance traveled to attend a QCWA meeting is a measurement of interest and motivation, Steve wins hands down over all other chapter members. Steve lives in a town considerably north of Dallas. The lifeblood of an organization is comprised of participation and support, not absentee well-wishing. That was filed by Bob Only, N5NT, Recording Secretary. Moving now to Chapter 65, Niagara Frontier, New York. By the time you read this, our Christmas party and annual meeting is but a pleasant memory. You are always assured of a fun time, enjoying the company of fellow members, some of whom you haven't seen for a whole year. A recruitment table was manned at the Lancaster Hempfest on October 14 by President Larry Rabecki, called WA2ARA, and later assisted by Vice President Tom Whalen, W2QI. It was great to see some of our members and all the other interested prospects. Hopefully all of you were able to get your antenna work completed before the ruthless western New York winter season, so you can join us for our weekly net at 1330 local on Sundays at 3900 kilohertz. We are proud to celebrate the following members who have attained their personal length of service milestones. Congratulations, all men. For 50 years, Roger Bean, K2SLZ, Paul Bond, WA2VTI, Bob Doran, K2VJG, Bob Gay, K2LGJ, Bob Hardy, K2IGW, Harry Kopp, K2YZO, Joe Margeron, K2DSO, Bob Rooney, W2AET, and Al Shumtrum, K2HWF. A lot of Bobs in there, huh? Here comes another one for 55 years. Bob Habermail, W2KKC, Steve Hinder, W0LUB, and John Van Soen, W2JUA. For 60 years, Marv Hess, W2WKU. That was submitted by Larry Rybecki, his call, WA2ARA, president of Chapter 65, Niagara Falls Frontier. We're going to head south now to the Blue Ridge, North Carolina, Chapter 76. It's always nice to start a chapter report with good news. Today, the 19th of September, our first and 25th chapter president, Harry Mills, K4HU, proudly celebrated his 100th birthday. On behalf of Chapter 76, I was pleased to present him with a QCWA Certificate of Appreciation inscribed, gratefully acknowledging his years of service to amateur radio QCWA and being a friend to anyone and everyone. When I arrived, he had just completed 5 laps around his porch and was in great spirits. To the readers who know Harry, he still gets on the air periodically and regularly meets with others via Echolink. Be happy in the fact that he's as sharp as ever. He was also to receive a plaque from the Radio Club of America marking his 100th birthday. The first of the Chapter 76 monthly meetings for this quarter was in July, and Harold Johnson, W4ZCB, provided a presentation on the topic of lightning, storm formation, lightning generation, and discharge characteristics were discussed. Additionally, personal safety measures were explained. Harold has done this presentation many times, and hopefully we get smarter each time. At our August meeting, our speaker was John McGuire, retired vice president of banking for SunTrust Bank in Atlanta. He gave a talk on changes in banking with respect to the growing use of computers over the years. The discussion reviewed the initial impact of mainframe computer systems, followed by networking the ATMs, and finally the current use of PCs for home banking. Additionally, insight was provided into what type of customer service was needed to support such 24/7 activities. The successful approach taken did not include overseas help centers that so many of us have learned to dislike. Labor Day weekend is a very active time for all of us in the mountains. First, the Shelby Ham Fest, and then our local Apple Festival and Parade. The Blue Ridge Amateur Radio Club was founded by members of Chapter 76, and among other public service contributions, they have been handling the county parade marshaling tasks for many years than I can remember. This year, a twist was added. For the first time, Amateur Radio had a float in a county parade complete with QCWA and ARIS banners prominently displayed on the rear loading platforms. The float was used as the net control site, running on solar power no less, and then slipped in at the end of the line of march when the marshaling tasks had been completed. We were pleased to be able to put amateur radio up front and personal with an approximated 275,000 spectators. That's about it from this corner of the Blue Ridge Mountains, Hooterville, and Chapter 76. If you're in the area, stop by and break bread with us. First and third Wednesdays at the Golden Corral, Henderson, North Carolina. That was submitted by Duke Knife, K-N-I-E-F, called W4DK. Let's go now to Chapter 85, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas. That's ARC-LA-TEX. L.A. We look forward to our next meeting at the Boissier History Center on Beckett Street in Boissier City on the last Saturday of October. Election of officers for the 2008 is one of the main agenda items. We are very happy to welcome three new members of Chapter 85, Robert Arnstead, N6NKZ, Andy Lord, W5MFS, and Johnny Odell, KA5BQM. These members resulted from a mass mailing to all QCWA members in the area. We hope to engage in further recruiting activities over the coming year. Mike McCrary, WB5LJQ, reports that the W5SHV, the area's first D-Star repeater, is now fully operational. Mike demonstrated the capabilities of D-Star at several recent club meetings, including QCWA Chapter 85. Local interest in D-Star is growing rapidly. We would like as many people as possible to participate in our weekly 2-meter net. Our net is conducted on the 146.67 repeater each Monday evening. The net begins at 8 p.m. during Daylight Standard Time and 7:30 p.m. during Central Standard Time. We invite everyone to join our informal meeting luncheon at 11 a.m. each Thursday at Luby's Cafeteria on Texas Street in Boissier City. That was submitted by John Stewart, Alpha Alpha 5 Kilo Victor, AA 5 KV. Well, we're heading back east now to the Nutmeg, Connecticut chapter, Chapter 149. The meeting was called to order by President Al Cohn, W1FXQ. There were about 20 people in attendance during the meeting and included members and spouses and friends. Al explained that many members were unable to attend because of a conflict with the memorial service for Roy Hilt, K1JNR, who became a silent key recently. Al then gave a very brief history of Chapter 149 and how its founder, Milton Chafee, W1EFW, wanted the chapter meetings to be events to which members could take their non-tactical wives and or friends, hence today's musical program. The meeting featured two special presentations. In the first presentation, General Manager Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, gave a slide presentation and talk entitled, quoting, "What QCWA is All About," close quote, which included a history of QCWA, its mission, and its activities worldwide. Following Chuck's program came a musical walk through memory lane by semi-retired professional entertainer Sam Pasco, called KA1GHM. He delighted the audience with personal experiences as a founding member of the acclaimed Al Jarvis Orchestra and his varied musical work in supplying the official orchestras for the Hartford Civic Center. He recounted fascinating experiences with numerous college reunions and public and private events for which his orchestras provided entertainment. KA1GHM's encyclopedic knowledge of thousands of well-known tunes from popular to classical delighted those present. He illustrated this with his playing of the saxophone. Many questions interspersed his presentation, and he was a genial and very entertaining guest. That was submitted by Tony Perrone, called W1CGI, Secretary. We're going back to the Mountain States, Chapter 160 in Utah, UT. Our group faced strong winds and blowing sand in Mesquite, Nevada, last spring, but luck was with us by the name of Charles, KH6AB. He invited us to come out of the weather and opened his home to us for the better part of the day. It turned out to be a fun time with lots of food to share and a whole lot of catching up to do. For dinner, we went over to the nearby golf resort and had more good food. What a great way to spend the day with good friends. Our thanks to Charles and Yvonne for coming to the rescue. Mark your calendar, March 25th, 2008, for the next Mesquite Frolic. The WIMU Hamfest was well attended, and some of the QCWA groups got together for dinner, and a good time was had by all who attended. The perfect way to end summer, spending time in Jackson, Wyoming. Remember our net on 7272 every Saturday, 11 o'clock a.m. Mountain Time. The band is supposed to improve. We can only hope. That was submitted by our YL, Mary Ellen Vaughn, W7CKD Secretary. Now for your listeners who love to travel, Virginia is for CQWA lovers. A perfect sun and sand convention weekend awaits you and yours in beautiful Virginia Beach. The 2008 UCWA International Convention, October 3 through 5, 2008 at Virginia Beach, Virginia. Accommodations, reservations. A block of rooms has been reserved at $90, U.S. dollars, taxes, etc., not included. For Ocean View, single, double, king rooms until September 10, 2008. Remember, the convention is October 3 through 5. After this date of September 10, there is no guarantee that this price can be honored, as this is still considered peak season in Virginia Beach. This rate is guaranteed beginning September 29 through October 7 inclusive. Now, for reservations, you want to contact the hotel directly at the following 800 number, 1-800-446-8199. And mention QCWA International Convention 2008 for this special rate. With regard to convention registration, online registration is available when it is eventually implemented at the following website, www.qcwa-ch119.org. Or by the mail-in form that will appear in the QCWA journals. When registering online, your payment must be received through the mail to guarantee your registration. A special prize will be awarded for early registrations. Information will be included on the registration form. Type the URL into the address window of your internet browser, www.qcwa-ch119.org. Plan ahead. Now, regarding hospitality receptions, there will be a meet and greet reception with heavy refreshments and entertainment on Friday evening. Tickets may be secured with your conference registration. Please don't miss this one. The convention planning group is finalizing plans for the program at as early a date as possible. Watch the QCWA Chapter 119 website for earliest information. The program will conclude with the convention banquet on Saturday evening. Pre-registration is required. Now here's a bit of information about the sponsors, Tidewater Chapter 119 Incorporated. The chapter was chartered in 1979. Members include individuals from the southeastern Virginia area predominantly, but including amateur radio operators in several more distant locations. Chapter 119 is on the air. HF Net meets on 3.947 megahertz, 3.947 megahertz every Sunday morning at 0800 local time, 1200 universal time constant. Please join him on Sunday and get acquainted a little ahead of the convention time. Remember, the QCWA convention this year is in Virginia Beach, Virginia, October 3 through October 5. Some of our QCWA members made the headlines recently, calling all ham radio operators. There's a picture. Several nice-looking gentlemen, young and older, thin and heavier, hi-hi. It states ham radio operators from the Crow River area amateur radio club demonstrated their emergency communications capabilities last weekend at Butler Field in Hutchinson. The group attempted to contact as many ham radio operators as possible during a 24-hour period from noon Saturday to noon Sunday. Chris Schultz, KC0YFX, who has had his license for about a year, talked on the radio. Bob Rusk in 0UF, a 45-year license holder, handled the controls, while Club Vice President Tom Gillespie, WB0PWT, looked on. The initials after their names signified their radio identification and license number. Here's a little bit of a plug for the QCWA Journal, members classified, that can assist you in your request for equipment or how to move equipment you no longer need. So try to sell some equipment. Looking for something hard to find? Check out the QCWA Journal. As we move along in the winter 2007 issue, there's a fine article here that's titled Your Antenna RF and Safety Gram. It's authored by David Kahn, C-O-N-N. His call is Victor Echo 3, Kilo Lima, V-E-C-K-L. It makes a note here. This article uses TCA hot links to provide access to enriched media from the RAC website. It's a great article. It runs actually 5 full pages in the winter journal. So if you can't read it yourself, you might want to enlist the support of one of your local QCWA members to go through it with you and perhaps pick up some points that you might have long ago forgotten about with regard to your antenna radio frequency and safety ground. Next, a report of the nominating committee for the 2008 election. According to our Constitution and bylaws, a QCWA president is required to appoint a biannual nominating committee in order to seek out qualified candidates for officers and members of the board of directors. QCWA President John Johnston, W3BE, made those appointments in 2006. With a reminder that a report of the nominating committee was due in the hands of the general manager as of June 15, 2007. The QCWA members appointed to the nominating committee consisted of Alan Pickering, KJ9N, former national secretary as chair, Croft Taylor, Victor Echo 3, Charlie Tango, former national president, and Harold Chase, W1EES, former longtime board member and chairman of the Chapter Relations Committee. The nominating committee wishes to report that it has completed its assignment as of June 1, 2007, and hereby submits the following names to the general manager. All have agreed to serve if elected for follow-up biographical data and management of the election process. The nominations are as follows. For board officers, for president, Mr. Len Nathanson, W8RC. For vice president, Mr. Ken Olke, Victor Echo 6, Alpha Fox, October. For secretary, Mr. Walt Supina, N3WS. For treasurer, Mr. Frank Harris, WA4PAM. Now, for the board of directors, 8 of these individuals will be elected, listed in alphabetical order. Mr. Leroy Baldy Baldwin, W0OFY. Mr. Val Irwin, ERWIN, call, W5PUT. Miss, a lovely YL, Carolyn Harrison, WB0OUM. Mr. Tony Hirsch, W8RSH. Mr. Pierre Mainville, VA3PM. Mr. Larry McCalvey, WA9JMO. Mr. William Pasternak, WA6ITF. Miss Joan Powell, Victor Echo 3, Zulu Charlie. Mr. Ken Simpson, W8EK. Mr. Ernie Skip Swenson, WB6VVA. Mr. Ed Yoder, W3YMB. Others may be nominated by a 25-member petition of office or board membership. Please contact the general manager for timelines and details. Respectively submitted, Messrs. Pickering, the chairman, Chase, and Taylor. Now here's a final look on this commentary regarding report of the nominating committee for the 2008 election. The following is from the bylaws, Article 6, Nominations and Elections, Section 4. Quoting, nominations of officers and director candidates may be submitted by the membership by petition signed by at least 25 members in good standing. Such petition shall be received by the general manager by December 15th of the appropriate year. Upon receipt of such a petition, the general manager shall, upon verifying the validity of the petition and the eligibility of the candidates, cause the names of the candidates to be placed on the ballot, along with those submitted by the nominating committee. Publication of the list of all eligible candidates shall be made in the spring issue of the QCWA Journal. We'll go now to a piece about the QCWA Memorial Scholarship Fund and its update. Many of you may wonder how you can participate in that program. This is authored by Leland W. Smith, Jr., called W4YE, QCWA Scholarship Chairman Committee, Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, Frank Harris, WA4PAM, and Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD. One of our finest outreach programs and the legacy of QCWA is the scholarship program. Did you know that since our first scholarship in 1979 through the 2007 winners, we have provided approximately 275 scholarships with a value of over $230,000? The recipients of our scholarships often write me thanking QCWA and tell me about their future endeavors. A comment: please convey my deepest thanks to all QCWA members for helping me realize a dream. I will be joining QCWA when eligible. Another quotation: it is an honor to receive the Memorial Scholarship. Another: the QCWA scholarship is greatly appreciated and will help me pay for most of my books and materials this year. Another: I appreciate the opportunity Ham Radio has provided in my life, and I am grateful for the support that QCWA has given me and other young hams. Individuals, chapters, and family members are encouraged to contribute to the scholarship program. All gifts are acknowledged and tax-deductible. Contributions are made to the QCWA Scholarship Fund and sent to Chuck Walbridge. Call K1IGD, General Manager of QCWA. All funds are deposited in a scholarship investment account. Only interest and dividends received are distributed for awards for the scholarship fund. May we suggest that all chapters consider making a contribution in memory of Silent Keys. This is one way in which we honor their friendship, amateur radio contributions, and their memory. Large or small, these contributions ensure the continuation of the program. Please note that applications are selected by the Foundation for Amateur Radio, and students should apply to FAR, the acronym for Foundation for American Radio, P.O. Box 831, Riverdale, one word, Riverdale, Maryland, M.D., 20738. Well, folks, we'll clean up today with Random Recollections of an Old Ham. The title here is Field Day in Connecticut in the High Speed Code, a journalistic history of the life and times of amateur radio by George Hart, called W1NJM. As most of you know who receive these recordings on the quarterly basis of the issues of the journal, Mr. Hart is a very, very voluminous writer. He goes on and on and on. I say that respectfully. We'll pick up this particular addition to his commentary in the section titled High Speed Code Practice. Being an accomplished operator of Morse code, I have always felt that more attention should be paid to giving higher speed operators more practice, in the same way that W1AW, since 1940, has provided code practice that speeds up to 35 words per minute. I fully understand why the league did not provide such a service. The number of amateurs interested in speeds above 35 words per minute was a very small majority. In fact, there was some talk that speed over 20 words per minute should be eliminated from the daily W1AW sessions, this being the highest speed required for the highest grade of amateur license. Sometime in 1957, I was entertaining a couple of Mars visitors from Washington. I don't remember their names or whether they were Air Force or Army Mars. But when I was showing them W1AW, I especially pointed out the new McElroy perforator and sending machine we had acquired after the 1953 fire. I said I wished I had something like this for my own personal use. They looked at each other and grinned. "Shall we let him have it?" One of them asked the other. "Why not?" The other replied. "What would you do with it if you had one?" I was asked. I replied that I would start a high-speed code practice program to supplement the W1AW code practice. Whereupon they took me out to their car, opened the trunk, and revealed the BOM, sending machine of the utmost sophistication. They told me it was a used machine, but in working condition, and they would be glad to leave it with me if I would use it for the purpose stated. I readily agreed and signed a memorandum receipt, which amounted to an indefinite loan and made it legally possible for the government to reclaim the item. The armed services were distributing much surplus wartime equipment to armatures through Mars on this basis, and I was assured that the prospect of its being reclaimed was absolutely nil. Followed many long hours of tinkering. There was no instruction book or tech manual with it. The thing weighed about 75 pounds, was built like a battleship, and included a 10-tube circuitry far beyond anything I had ever seen, totally unlike any of the machines I had seen back in college days when we had visited AARS at the Munitions Building in Washington. This machine used photoelectric cell tubes to reduce code using the same kind of two-hole Wheatstone tape as used at W1AW and perforated by the McElroy Creed perforator there. If only I could figure out how it worked. I managed to get a tech mount from the Bohm Company, which was still operating in New York City, and some replacement tubes. The tech mail, in parenthesis, I think they charged me for it because the PEC key was an obsolete model and they had to dig the manual out of their old files, close parenthesis, was very detailed. And it helped me a lot in understanding how the beast was supposed to work. But I still couldn't get it going, so I took it to New York and visited the Bohm Labs. They treated me quite courteously, but seemed just a little amused at my enthusiasm to get it to work. Nevertheless, after I explained the symptoms to one of the older employees, he made some adjustments and said the gear would now work perfectly if I followed the manual's instructions. But he had no tape to try it out. I hadn't brought one along, thinking surely they would have one. Modern technology moves fast, and obsolescence creeps up on you. Back home, I finally got the key to operate from a tape made on the W1AW perforator. It was still a little shaky. The adjustments were very touchy. But at least the darn thing would now send code. The speed range, much to my astonishment, was from 10 to 700 words per minute in two ranges. I contemplated a high speed of 60 words per minute, so operation would be on the low speed range. Then I measured the speeds at the different settings and found that the settings were not accurate enough to suit me. So I made a chart to show what settings I should use for 15 to 60 words per minute in 5-word-per-minute intervals. Then came the business of preparing tapes. I had no perforator, but Ed Handy had given me permission to use the W1AW perforator and their supply of 15/16-inch blank tape, provided only that I did not at any time interrupt the station's normal operation. Cutting the tapes was a long, difficult process requiring a lot of time and effort. The procedure was to prepare enough continuous tape to provide 10 minutes of practice at 5-speed sequences for each session. When I knew I made a typo, I would leave 3 blank, that's 12 center hole spaces. Later, after the whole tape was cut, I would go through it and correct the typos or other errors by punching a corrected piece of tape, scissoring out the erroneous part, and pasting the correct part in its place. I soon found that rubber cement was no good for this purpose. It wasn't strong enough or long-lasting enough. I found Elmer's white glue to be the best for the purpose. Once all the known errors had been corrected, I measured out tape for each speed using a chart I had made for the purpose, and between each speed change pasted in a W1NJM ID and announcement of speed change. Then, to complete the job, I played the whole tape on the machine and stopped it every time an error occurred, cutting out the erroneous part and pasting a corrected piece of tape in its place. Unfortunately, not being a fast or very accurate typist, this whole process took several hours, at the end of which the tape had dozens of splices in it. I still have many of those tapes, and dare say they would still work on the old bomb machine. I used each tape 6 times, at least a year apart each time. I must have over 100 of those old tapes stored in my basement. Just think, if I had 100 tapes and each one took me 3 hours to prepare, that's 300 hours, or about 12 and a half days. It was a labor of love, but it was definitely labor. Well, folks, George Hart continues on rambling his enjoyable remembrances of ham radio in his old age. I'll conclude with the final paragraph of his commentary in this issue. But the greatest number of ham friends I made in Florida were in the local 2-meter net. My trailers were always equipped with 2-meter gear, used to make contacts with various 2-meter repeaters along the way. There were several repeaters in the Fort Myers Naples area, easily accessible from my location in Citrus Park, with a 5/8 wave vertical atop the trailer. I made contact with the 28 slant 88 repeater in Fort Myers, some 25 miles north, was recognized by one of its users and invited to participate in the Southwest Florida Traffic Net, which met at 10 a.m. every day except Sunday. I was not experienced in phone traffic nets, but this net claimed to be part of NTS, National Traffic Service. And before I knew it, I was tagged to be net control once a week. I believe it was on a Wednesday. I had never before controlled a phone net of any kind, but felt I couldn't conscientiously refuse. After a couple of shaky starts, I found myself thoroughly enjoying it and took part in the net nearly every day. That concludes George Hart's commentary for this issue of the journal. In the next installation, George continues with his high-speed code experiences. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the conclusion of the reading of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for the winter session 2007. The QCWA is published on a quarterly basis by the Quarter Century Wireless Association, founded in 1947. The material is edited by Douglas Walbridge, P.O. Box 281, Hudson, Massachusetts, 01749. The editor can be reached at qcwaeditor@gmail.com. So as I leave you with this reading of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal in digest form for winter 2007, I again reiterate the emphasis we want to put upon the celebration of the 60th anniversary of the Quarter Century Wireless Association and all of the great activities that are going on in participation of that very, very important event. This recording has been a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It's for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only, and of course any Quarter Century Wireless Association participants that they choose to allow to listen to this material. If you'd like more information about the Handy Ham System, you can go to the Courage Handy Ham System. Its email is handyham@courage.org. The website, www.handyham.org. The location is 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. Your reader, my name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH geographic location is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. If you'd like to send me an email commenting upon the readings, what we left out, what you'd like to see more of, you're welcome to do so. My email is my call sign, all lowercase, N1BLF, at Comcast, C-O-M-C-A-S-T, .net. Thanks a lot for listening.